Hey, everyone, and welcome to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast. Today on the podcast, Bordeaux legend Anne Francois Key. She is owner with her and her twin brother of a excellent Cru Bourgeois, Chateau Bellhomme, plus owns a couple pretty big-named vineyards that you might have heard of, Crozette Bage and Chateau Croze Bage and Chateau Roson Gassis. Bage is in Polec and Gassis is in Margaux. And what you probably need to know, but you probably already guessed if you listen to this podcast, I make a lot of pronunciation mistakes. I should have taken French more than I did, but I didn't. I dropped out as soon as I could at the end of grade 9. I even took the more basic level French, like the lowest level. I'm talking about the sort of French where if you could say my boat is blue, you were going to pass. And if you nailed bleu, you're going to get 80s. And it certainly comes up a bunch of times. But Anne is really nice. She did a great job. A really great interview. If you want to learn a little bit more about Bordeaux, this is a good one. I mean, we talk about blending and we talk about what Merlot and Cabernet Sauvignon and Cabernet Franc, what they bring to a wine and the difference between, you know, growth wine, you know, and the bourgeois. And my favorite part was she gave some of the differences between Polec and Margaux. And these appellations are very close, but they produce very different styles of wines. So it was excellent. A really great interview that you'll hear in just a moment. Over the weekend or on Friday, I was at this huge Grand Cru event for Halfords, which is a giant wine consignment company. And I think I bitched about it maybe the first episode, but if you ever go to like one of these big tasting events where there's tons of producers, please, please slide to the side after your glass has been poured. You know, and you can go back, but everyone, please, there's nothing worse than someone gets their wine poured and they're either talking about it with their friend or they're talking about it with the wine owner. And I get it. You want to talk to the wine owner, the winemaker, whoever is there. But when there's a bunch of people standing behind you, get the bleep out of the way. It's annoying. And then there's a huge lineup. You can't tell me you don't notice the lineup. You can't tell me that you don't notice that you are causing everyone else to wait. Unless you have incredible lack of self-awareness, which in some part of me, I'm jealous of that, that you can go through life. I can't. And I'm not saying I'm a hero, but I can't do that kind of thing. Like, you know, the moment I get my wine, bam, I'm out of the way. And it was packed and tried some great Muscadet and some great Barolo, like just, I was going to go through all my notes, but when you do an event like this, and I got there late, you could only make a couple little notes here or there. But I recommend, as always, going to any of these sort of events, bring in a notepad. You could really help to calibrate your own palate and what you like and what you don't like. So that was really great. So in honor of doing of having a Bordeaux guest on, I'm going to recommend an excellent wine, but something that people don't normally drink, which is white Bordeaux. When you think of Bordeaux, naturally you think red, as you should. And then with whites, you probably think more of the sweet, the dessert stuff, the Sauternes of the world. But there is white Bordeaux, and the main grapes is Sauvignon Blanc, Semillon, and sometimes Muscadel. The wine that I'm drinking, 2015 Chateau Giraud. And this is, and Giraud, they are a great producer of Sauternes, famous Sauternes producer. But they also, you know, will release some dry white stuff. And this is great. I won't do the slurpy thing. I'll just take the mic away when I'm having a sip of it. But yeah, this is 50% Sauvignon Blanc and 50% Semillon. So even Steven. On the nose, a lot of stone fruit. A lot of white florality, white peach. You get some, a little bit of pineapple, a little bit of tropical. On the palate, very similar, a little more green apple. But yeah, the white fruit is really coming out. And what's great is there is spiciness to this wine. Yeah, I said I wasn't going to do any slurping, then I just made a noise. I might edit that out or something. But this is crisp. Purity of fruit, great acid, refreshing wine. Like, I know in the summer, it's going to be a lot of Pinot Grigio or maybe Anouk Chardonnay or Rieslings. two out of those three options are excellent. But if you can find it, and it's you know, a lot of restaurants and bars, they're not going to do it because they don't sell as well. You know, it's like white Bordeaux. What the bleep am I drinking? But if you can find it, grab it. And this is great value. Like, this wine is probably around $30. I bought it a little while ago. I don't remember. I've seen it in the States for like around 20 American, probably a little bit more up here, probably close to 30. But there's just such depth, character. Like, I can still, I had a sip like 30, 40 seconds ago. I can still get a little bit of that weird spicy note, which you don't usually get from white. And I still have the fruit. It's still lingering. So it's a good finish. There's a lot of depth and character. So if you can find it, G-U-I-R-A-U-D. Chateau Giraud is the winery. But make sure, like, you know, you'll know it's not the Sauternes. Because it'll be a lot more expensive than this. And it'll just have like the letter G on it somewhere on the label. So would highly recommend. And just dip your toe a little bit into white Bordeaux. There is a market for it. There is excellent producers out there. But you're going to have to do a little digging. You're going to have to do a little hunting to find some of the good stuff. It can be tricky to find. Anyway, enough out of me. Thank you very much for everyone listening. Remember to tell your friends about the podcast. And please rate, review. I read the reviews. Pretty much everything's been pretty stellar, which is fantastic. But if you have issues, things you'd like to see, you can always shoot me a tweet at mcause56. But without further ado, between her and her twin brother, they own three really special wineries. We got to drink on that night the Bourgeois, a variety from, you know, about a 15, 16 year range of the wines, and it was a great night. And a lot of them we drank at a Magnum. Ooh, I'll say this before I go. Get Magnums. Seriously, like for a dinner party where you know you're going to be going through more than two bottles of wine, grab a Magnum. It's fun. It's novelty. It's different. It just looks cool. You know, I mean, get something you like, but it's just, it's a fun little treat. And let me tell you, it goes well at parties. So anyway, enough of me yammering. Here is Anne-Francois Key.
The title is clunky, but the wine talk is smooth. You're listening to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast.
Hey, everyone, and welcome to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast. And this one is a real thrill. I'm at the National Club getting set for a winemakers event. It's a Bordeaux winemaker event with a very important person in the world of Bordeaux, Anne-Francois. Now, how do I pronounce? Is it Kie?
Kie, Q-U-I-E.
Yes.
Thank you for our invitation.
Oh, yeah. Thank you so much.
Very happy to be here.
Yeah, thank you so much for doing it. And you were saying before, you know, you worry sometimes about your English. Mm-hmm. I'm even worse. I'm going to worry about my French. before we get into the wines that we're going to be drinking tonight, the vertical of your Cru Bourgeois, mm-hmm. I was wondering if you could tell people just a little bit about your family and the history that they did getting into Margaux and Paulhac and Medoc.
In fact, my grandfather was a wine merchant based in Paris, but he was coming from Bordeaux. And as many wine merchants in France, he wanted to be a producer. So he had in 1936 the opportunity to buy Chateau Bellhomme, the wine we're going to taste this evening. And it was, in fact, the wedding gift of my grandmother, charming wedding gift.
Wow.
Yes. You know, the level is high in family.
Yes. Yeah. I feel bad for all other wedding gifts in your family.
It's like, yes, it's difficult for men.
Oh, you got me some dinner plates. Grandma got a winery.
That's nice, no?
Yeah.
That was kind. But I have to say that he wanted to have classified growth. Mm-hmm. So after, because they had already a nice place to be, a very nice vineyard, he decided to invest in two classified growth. Mm-hmm. Firstly, in 1942, he bought Chateau Croisebage in Pauillac, a fifth classified growth. And then in 1946, Chateau Rosengassy, second classified growth in the appellation of Margaux.
So I want to go there for a second. How, when I was doing my research here, and I knew that in 1942, how difficult was it to buy the land or to make the wine? Because 1942, the Second World War was going on in France. And, you know, we hear all the stories, what was going on in Champagne, which I know is very different, you know, very far away from Bordeaux. But, I mean, that level of chaos must have been very, I mean, very difficult.
You just have to imagine that those vineyards at that period were totally ruined, by the all the disease we had, mildew, phylloxera, mm-hmm. oidium, the war came after, and nobody wanted to have vine at that period. Mm-hmm. So it was quite cheap. And my grandfather had an incredible good vision of what could be the future.
Right.
So it was quite easy, in fact, to buy classified growth at that period. Mm-hmm. And it was an affordable investment, could say.
Yeah. I mean, affordable is all in context, but you're right. Like mine at that time, you're right. That is a classic. Your family bought low when you consider how much any small property in, you know, Palac or Margaux goes for today. That is a crazy investment.
Yes, and you just have to imagine that, of course, when you're managing a vineyard, it's a question of passion. It's more than a hobby, you know. So it's kind of a dream, and it was the case for my grandfather. So of course he was opening his eyes mm-hmm. to be sure that he'd get on the good opportunity. Yeah. Really.
Well, you get a second growth, a fifth growth, and then a very respected Cru Bourgeois. That's fantastic. Well, now, what about you, Anne, for a second? You come from a wine family. Was this natural for you to study oenology and to go into the business?
Well, in fact, I studied oenology because, of course, I was very interested with all the luck we have in the family with those vineyards. But firstly, I wanted to work in other company, you know. So I was more in distribution, in bank also, mm-hmm. at the beginning of my career. And one day, my father, you know, I'm sure he had an idea in mind, asked me to come and help him just few weeks, you know, but when you come, you never leave. So, and at that period, you know, I was nearly 30 years old. Mm-hmm. So I was not anymore, I could say, a teenager. So, of course, we passed. He had to pass also his father's role. And I could have also my technical involvement in the chateaus.
Was there, there might not be an answer to this. I asked this to almost all my guests. Was there a moment for you where you fell in love with wine, or is it different because it was always ingrained in your family? Some people talk about some Grand Cru Burgundy that they had. For me, it was an old Barolo. Mm-hmm. Was there a moment for you where you realized, this is what I want to do?
To be true, I have to say that I truly realized when I lived mm-hmm. to go, you know, the company and so on. And I realized that something was missing. And when I came back to the vineyard, I was truly and fully happy to be there.
Yeah.
That's the living, you know, bring me the light to understand it.
Yeah, and it's easy to see. If anyone, you know, hasn't been there, just driving through Bordeaux, it's great because it's small little roads. You have the river, you have the hills. At some points, you have giant, huge, gorgeous chateaus, and other times, little small ones. It's easy to fall in love with that area. So I was wondering, because a lot of people are getting into Bordeaux, if we could talk a little bit first about what we're drinking tonight, like the term Cru Bourgeois, you know, in terms of what does that mean when you see that label on the bottle?
It's a Cru Bourgeois.
Bourgeois, thank you.
Bourgeois, we say in French, yes, that's true.
No, we
say
Bourgeois in Canada, just my French is horrible.
Oh. The same bourgeoisie. So in France, it is an estate that has a familial size. The classement of Cru Bourgeois began in 1932, exactly. It was the case for Chateau Bellorme. It was just after, you know, the classified growth of the Médoc. Mm-hmm. Napoleon did it in 1855. And it is now, I'm sure you know, totally closed. It cannot move anymore.
Yes.
So just after, you have the Cru Bourgeois.
And did it change in the last decade in terms of how they decide who gets in? Like, it used to be in the mid-400s, and I think it's down to like 256 or something in terms of just how you can get into it, or how you can, how you get that title. Did that change in the last little
yes,
while?
Yes, that changed. I have to say, I'm sure you know that in France, we love to cut everything in little pieces.
Yes, tiny. Yes.
And in it was, in fact, the purpose was to bring more identity to the growth. It changed the last 10 years, and our consumer was more or less confused of love changement. You know, also that French people don't like to change too much.
Yeah.
So, you know, it was a very traditional way to be, to trust the chateau. And those changements were not so good because people was lost, in fact, and didn't understand why it was a Cru Bourgeois before and not after, but
right.
Tomorrow maybe.
Yeah.
It was not so easy. So we decided to play another game. Now Château Bellorme is the property at Château Rose-Angassy. Mm-hmm. We used to say Château Bellorme is our Cru Bourgeois of heart,
right.
But and the little brother of Rose-Angassy.
Okay, that makes sense. And with Cru Bourgeois, when you see that, that means it's past a certain level of qualification. So if people see it, it means it's hit a certain standard to get that title. And I always wonder, is there an issue in terms of selling, in terms of North America, mid-price good Bordeaux? Because I think a lot of people, when they think Bordeaux, they either think the $400, $500 first, second, third growth, or just the really sort of big pool of very inexpensive, well under $20. But is it hard to sell in sort of almost that mid-price level of Bordeaux where you can find great value?
It's not hard, but as everywhere, you need to explain, to present, to taste those wine, middle-range wine, I could say, to my opinion, are maybe the best values of Bordeaux. We have an incredible knowledge. We are able to give to those growths all the technical improvement we have in our profession in the last 20 years, maybe. But of course, they are less well known than the biggest and it's a way to afford how is a blend Bordeaux wine, how can it evolve. This is the purpose, for example, of our dinner. We have many different vintages, and this is also how nice to understand what could be Merlot and Cabernet blend in its use when it's older. This is typically the tradition of Bordeaux, and we, of course, are here to explain and to learn.
Yeah, and we're trying from a 2000 to 2016. So what would you, when you were describing Bellorme in terms of the soil, the blend, where it is in Bordeaux, how would you what would you tell people about this wine?
Château Bellorme is what is in the region of Médoc, I mean in the left bank of Bordeaux. In that bank, we have gravel soils. Those soils are very interesting because they will never keep the water of the rain, so they are very well drained, and this is the heaven of Cabernet Sauvignon. And this vintage need to be a little stressed to be ripe enough. So we most of the time have a blend with Merlot. In Château Bellorme, it is the majority, an average of 50-55% of Merlot in the final blend, and 45% of Cabernet Sauvignon.
And for people, because the thing about Bordeaux, and people, most people listening know this, that it is a blend. And the three main grapes, and there are five, but the main ones are Merlot, Cabernet Sauvignon, Cabernet Franc. I was wondering, what do each one of those individual grapes, what do they bring to your wines?
In our wines, we love Merlot for the fruity and juicy load it can bring to the attack of the wine. You know, it's red, it's pleasant, the nose is full. It's a charming grape variety, I have to say. We are doing our best not to harvest it too late because sometimes the level of alcohol could be quite high, and we don't want to have more than 13.5 alcohol at the final blend, in the final blend, sorry. So we are looking for those fruity, juicy Merlot, and we try also to keep in those juices a certain type of freshness and acidity. not to have a flat wine, you know, and heavy in mouth. This is totally the opposite with Cabernet Sauvignon. Cabernet Sauvignon takes its time.
Yeah.
So you wait as long as you can to harvest it, to be sure that the tannin it will bring, the structure of the wine will be silky and very velvet. So this is two different main characters of Chateau Bellarme. And in the blend, that's very nice because you can have a wine quite easy to drink young by this quantity of Merlot we have, but also able to age because nearly half of the wine is made with Cabernet Sauvignon.
And then what is Cab Franc? I know you have much less of it, but what is Cab Franc?
We have a tiny proportion of Cab Franc, and I have to say that today it's not the case anymore.
Oh yeah.
We decided to replace it by Cabernet Sauvignon. Mm-hmm. As you know, the average age of the vineyard in Bordeaux is quite high. In Chateau Bellarme, it is around 35 years, and the chateau is the vineyard with 30 hectares. So we only had one plot of mm-hmm. Cab Franc. So it was very old, and with my brother, we didn't know what to do, and we just select Cabernet Sauvignon to be sure to increase the age capacity of the wine.
I'm going to go off script for a little second here. When you talk about how Cabernet Sauvignon can take so long, do you have a vintage? I know you said that 2009 was like a perfect, a great winemaker's vintage. Do you have a year where you're sitting there feeling scared or nervous about your Cabernet Sauvignon?
When you mean nervous, you mean sure.
Is it going to go? There's been rain. What's going on?
I think that the 03 was quite difficult. As I told you just before, Cabernet Sauvignon needs time. But it needs also not only hotness, it's something very warm on the mm-hmm. climate. The 03 was quite warm in Bordeaux, and sometimes it is blocking the evolution and the ripeness of the fruits. Mm-hmm. This year was not so easy.
Oh, really?
To say.
Okay,
it was not so easy.
19's been a tough year.
19?
Oh, sorry. No, I guess you mean like, do you mean last year's vintage?
Oh, no, it's going well. The harvest just began 2 days mm-hmm. ago. It's my brother. I am on phone with my brother, of course. It's going very well.
Oh, that's great.
Very well. I'm saying we're going to have again in Bordeaux a great vintage.
Okay. I'll get to it later because I have some questions about vintage. We'll see if we have time. A lot of people always want to know just, what is it about your second growth? That's the one in Margaux, and then the fifth growth in Polec. Why is it? What is it about those wines, those growth wines? What is it about those wines that make them so special? And obviously, they're more expensive versus a well-made cru bourgeois.
Those wines are planted for a very long time, and it could be logical to understand that old people select the best soils to do it. Mm-hmm. You were speaking about vintage, for example. If I'm just imagine in Rosangassie, we are always able to have the good answer of the terroir to that question.
Yeah.
This is what is a great terroir. A great terroir is able to give you the best each time. Mm-hmm. And this is the case for the Grand Cru Classé of Médoc, and that's why they are so expensive sometimes.
Yeah.
But not all of them, I have to say.
Well, actually,
Of course, there is a lot of demand all around the world and that participates in seeing highs of the price.
Did I read, and sorry to interrupt, that you guys were one of the few owners in 2009 that you lowered the price of your Rosangassis. Is that true?
You mean in comparison with the 08?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, just like I think it might have been for the futures market.
Ah.
I read somewhere that Anne is one of the few owners of Chateau in Bordeaux who decided to lower the price of their 09 vintage while the rise is almost universal. So I read that and that.
In fact,
it might be fake news. This was just in all the research.
If I understood well, no, it's not true. But I have to say something very important. Of course, when you have a great wine, you're very happy to increase your prices. But the question is, do believe that it's not here. The truth is that at that period, people was not knocking at the door to be sure to have wine. That's the principle of future sale, you know.
Yeah.
People are buying the wine because they want to be sure to have one. But you get to keep your reason. Mm-hmm. So, of course, it is logical that the quality of the wine and its prices are following them, each other.
The supply and demand.
But it had to be reasonable, I think. And that's true.
Yeah.
I just want to be always reasonable. And it do participate to little by little the great notoriety of Rose Engessy, because all my clients are coming with me in my adventures, my brother and I should say, for the evolution of the growth. And we have a fantastic fan I want to thank here, because my growths are still truly affordable.
Oh, yeah. I've seen the prices compared to others. I've been lucky to try some of the vintages of all of them. Actually, the only one I haven't had is what we're going to have tonight, the Bellon, which I'm excited for.
Yes, it's very easy.
I can't wait, because it's important. Like, I get into the futures a little bit. I'll dip my toe here or there, but it's always good. You need to have that range. When did you and your brother, what year was it? Like, when did you guys fully sort of take over, or not fully take over? When did you and your brother start to become really involved with the wineries?
My twin brother came just before me, two, three years before me in 99. And I'm working with the family since 2002, exactly. Mm-hmm. If I have to tell the story, I would say that my grandfather bought the groves, but it's my father who did the main job, replanting all the vineyard, reconstructing the three chateaus. It had the hardest part to do, I have to say. And Jean-Philippe and I, when we just arrived, everything was ready to increase the quality of the wine. And my father understood that at that period, you know, and gave us the keys and say, "I trust you."
Yeah.
That was an incredible, fantastic trust.
Yeah.
And little by little, of course, we are perfecting the process to propose you the best as we can.
Did you feel any pressure when he gave it to you?
Because yes.
That is a hell of a trust and a gift. I mean, you guys are in charge of history. I mean, this is a part of the culture of France.
Yes, that's. It's a big responsibility, I have to say, because of course the Kiev family is here, but Rose Engessy will never pass. So we are only for, I don't know, I hope a long time. But we are passing through the times, and that's a real responsibility. Yes.
Are you identical or fraternal twin?
Oh, very different.
No, you, because I'm a fraternal twin.
Oh yeah.
Yes, I have a twin brother.
Okay.
So you guys are very different.
Very different.
Yeah.
All things. In fact, that's why I believe this is what is magical when we're working all together, because we are totally complementary.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. So
that's very easy.
You complement each other.
Yes, yes, exactly.
What is your biggest strength? What would you say is your biggest strength that you help to complement your brother the most?
You have a twin brother, so I'm sure you understand very easily. You just have to look at your twin in its eyes, and you understand easily. It is exactly the same. Mm-hmm. So we are sharing the same dreams for the chateau, the same hopes, and we are very quick in the decision we are taking, and there is never, our big strength could be we are never angry for each other for another thing.
Yeah.
Somebody made a mistake, can happen. What could be the next steps all together to do it good?
Mm-hmm.
And this is precious. This is precious.
Really. It is.
I trust him.
Yeah.
He trusts me.
And it's so important for making wine is trust.
Yes,
I'm are you going to pick? What's the blend going to be? You know, just all those sorts of questions.
For those questions, I have to say,
yeah,
I'm trusting totally Jean-Philippe.
Oh,
he has a better, I am an analogist, but I have to say, he's a better analogist than me.
Mm-hmm.
So he is always deciding, truly.
It is a tough one. Before I let you go, because I think I want to ask more of for the people that are really into wine, I know we try to avoid generalizations. But between Polec and Margaux, those wines, you know, they do have a difference in terms of how they taste. I was wondering if you would describe the differences between the wine character from those two areas.
Oh, it's very easy to understand. It's not possible for me to show that with my microphone, mm-hmm. but vineyards in Margaux are composed with many different plots of vine. It is totally different in Pauillac. Most of the time, the vineyard is only in one piece. Mm-hmm. So in Margaux, you will have a blend of many different nuances, shade of tastes. Mm-hmm. And that brings elegance, complexity and softness to the wine. In Pauillac, you have one main strong and powerful expression due to the vineyard, you know?
Ah.
And that gives you the keys of the two main characters of the wines.
That's a really good answer. As someone like I've studied wine for a lot of my life, I never thought of it, you know, in that way. That is a great way. So we're trying a bunch of the wines tonight. What should we be expecting? Because we're trying from 2000 up to 2016. I believe the 05 is in Magnum. What should I be expecting tonight?
You will taste our last baby, the 16. I'm very proud to say that he had a platinum medal in the Decanter Asia. Yes, we just learned that 3 days ago. So,
congratulations!
Thank you so much. So, you have our fantastic little baby tonight, but mm-hmm. also, I do believe that the true Chateau is able to speak directly in your glass of its history. So we try to have the menu with the great vintages of Bordeaux, of course. And you will have also the way to compare how wine is able to evaluate. Mm-hmm. For example, the 2000 we have tonight. You were speaking about responsibility and heritage and so on. Can you imagine the responsibility you had when you're a master of cellar and you are in front of the grape of the 2000 vintage? You know, all of us was knowing it was iconic, you know? So, and it had to pass the year, of course. So at that period, we decided to build it quite strong to be sure that we can taste that fantastic vintage across the decennies. You can have an idea today of the evolution of those wines. And you were speaking about mid-price Bordeaux Cru Bourgeois,
right,
the beginning of that interview. That what is very interesting is to share with all with the guest of tonight how it could be fantastic young, but it had the main characteristic of the great growth of Bordeaux. Mm-hmm. It's able to age. So it's a great palette that can offer that kind of wine.
I can't wait and really appreciate you joining me on this podcast. It's an honor to talk to you as someone who loves your wines and loves loves what Bordeaux is all about. And looking forward to hearing you talk about it tonight and trying some fantastic wine and some good food.
I hope you will like it so much.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thanks, everyone, for listening to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast. Remember, iHeartRadio, Spotify, Stitcher, iTunes, and wherever good podcasts are sold.
Thanks for listening to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast. Happy hunting.